I got it right that time. The director of engineering at Franz Inc. And go ahead.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about a Lego case run down in alpha space 0.74, and you can get this transform to get another alpha grinding database. It's more than that. Then I've driven away all the people from Eurolisp. I gave the same talk about a month ago in Amsterdam, a Eurolisp meeting. So what I told the people in Europe, and what I'm telling here, is that if I look at what our customers are doing, if I look at what listeners are doing, they're always in the complexity business. They're doing complex applications. This is a recent picture of IBM showing that in the past, big companies, some big groups of people could afford to work on complex problems. But if we now look at all the startups we support, all the startups that come to us, we look around, we see smaller organizations that are going to do more complex stuff. And this is another picture, again, by IBM, and all the red arrows point to the customers that we have in this area. So we have customers in this area, in the telcos, manufacturing, financial services, life sciences, and these guys, companies in these groups, have enormous problems with the large amounts of data and complex data. Now, large problems, say half of all these problems really can solve the Oracle relational databases in general, but some of these problems are just too hard to do in a relational database. So what you usually see is that programmers that still have to work with these large databases come up with kind of object relational mappings, homegrown usually, where they run a marshaller to get the data in memory, create objects, do then some reasoning over the stuff. You have to worry about what objects you change, you have to worry about how to commit these objects, keep the consistency, and then write that. Almost every programmer, once in his life, has written some kind of object relational method. What we're trying to do with a Lego case is to write, to take away the pain for listeners, and to come up with a true object-oriented database. So as I said before, you see a big trend for objects combined with databases. You hibernate for Java, you prefer some for .NET, you've got Oracle's object-oriented extensions in Java, even got a CLC for SQL. And all these things are mainly user-friendly layers of SQL. You still have to know what you're doing in a SQL database. But what we're trying to do with France is to come up with a really different approach. So what I'm saying to everyone who's using Oracle, is there anyone in the room using Oracle for large projects? So this basically is not a time to get people away from Oracle. If you can solve your problem with Oracle, please use Oracle. If you can use it with MySQL, please use it with MySQL. If what you do is only set operations, then you're probably very, very happy with a relational database. However, if you've got data that's best described as a complex graph, whether it's genealogy or just Schrödinger's complex frame system, and if your graph is many times larger than memory, because it's smaller, it's just loaded. You don't need a database. And if you do graph search or complex queries or inferencing or reasoning instead of set operations, and if you have heterogeneous data, by that I mean you have objects where even on the object-by-object basis, the number of slots could vary, the type of slots, the size of the object could change, or if your data is in multiple databases, then you really might want to consider an object-oriented database. Or for example, if you're object definition changes all the time, and you've got default schemas. Relational databases just don't love that kind of stuff. And one place where you can use object-oriented databases is if you need random access in your database, you need caching for, or you need to get just that one object from a billion objects, then in many cases, again, an object-oriented database is probably faster than a relational database. So that's about the why of a Lego cache. Hey, I'm missing a slide. So what we did with the LegoCast database is we want to be an object-oriented database, but it should also have the capabilities of any modern database. So we created the database standalone and a client-server model. In the standalone version, you have and the database and your application, and it caches all in your memory space. And of course, you can have multiple clients where you talk to one single server over all sockets. We do have commits and rollbacks. As soon as in Lisp you open the database, you're in a transaction mode. And you stay in transaction mode till you close the database. If you're satisfied with the consistency of your data, you can do a commit, and otherwise you do a rollback, and all the objects that you've created will just go away. So this is, in a sense, so we've got a fully transactional system. We made sure that our system is ACID. Anyone know what ACID is? By now, of course. Anyone care about it, worry about it? I'm not going to explain it. Basically, just look at the atomicity. I mean, you create 1,000 objects. When you do commit, or all the 1,000 objects get committed, or zero objects get committed. If you've got this 1,000 objects and one has got a slot for the wrong data type, the data is no longer consistent, so if you try to commit, you just get a rollback. You work in isolation, meaning that if you get the data out of the database, and then I get the data out of the database, then no one else can change the data for me. And only when I write it back to the database do I find out whether someone tried to modify the data while I was working on the same type of data. So what we have in the LegoCast is not pessimistic concurrency, but we have optimistic concurrency. Anyone familiar with that thing? Okay, great. Okay, we'll talk about it. If you
have less transactions.
Not yet. So then a Lego cache for Lispers. Well, basically it's just a persistent plus. And it runs on all our 20 platforms. So all that now about six different 64-bit systems where we run on. And we have, of course, a whole range of 32-bit systems, and this database just works on all these platforms. The one new thing since my talk in Europe is that we now completely run in Lisp. Previously, we ran on Berkeley database. Most of you are probably familiar with that. But we had some problems with it, both with the C-style locking of these B-trees. And when you forgot on Lisp to close the cursor when you were going through your B-tree box, and you came back to the database, you couldn't open the database anymore. A number of problems, and of course, there was the licensing issue, where if we create a database and we would sell it to people, and the people would now have to deal with two types of licenses instead of only the cloud license. So in order to get rid of that, we decided to make a completely Lisp-based B-tree system, mostly copying what Berkeley database can do. So we have we can have floating cursors, and it can have multiple concurrent readers, so many people at the same time can read from the database. Currently, we have only one writer at the same time. The keys and the values in our B-tree are unsigned by eight arrays. So in principle, you can take anything you want for the key size, anything you want for the value size. The big advantage for us to have in Lisp is that we now can write the comparison functions also in Lisp. In the previous version, we had to write the comparison functions in C. We can find now a comprehensive marshalling package, so almost any data type we can get in the database, just like a big hash table. Yeah, the value can be any Lisp type. The key can be any Lisp type. The value can be any Lisp type. And the very fine-grained control over the cache size. So what you do when you open the database, the B-tree, then you just specify how many blocks the B-tree can take. Those B-trees go very quickly into old space, basically numbers, this unsigned byte array, so you hardly get any calls, so it's almost a non-constant B-tree once you're done. And so we use resizing of the B-tree blocks, using the same blocks to get incredible performance and hardly any garbage. We compared it with Berkeley database B-tree, and what you see is that if you add key value pairs to the B-tree and the key to failure together are less than 32 bytes. It can store about 130,000 pairs per second, which is really, really fast. And it can do 66,000 objects for key value pairs per second if the keys are completely random and normalized. And again, if it's less than 32, if you go bigger than 32 bytes for both the key and the value, then you run into the overflow loss and the performance goes down 50%. That's basically the same thing about getting an inverted database. Okay, so this is the underlying layer. One of the things we're thinking about is really productizing the B-tree, because we're creating this entire Allegro cache on top of these B-trees. But I think it would be great if,
Can you have one of these B-trees as a slot value inside an object, for like,
I'll demo it later. Yeah, you can have that. Yeah, no problem. Okay, I'll skip this one. Yes. So more features from a list programmer's point of view. We created a meta class called persistent class. As soon as you define an object in that way, then the object will be stored for you. As soon as you do a commit, we can do a change class definition. So even in the running program, you can change your class. Next time you get an old object that was defined on your old class, we lazily will update the spots for that particular object. One distinguishing feature for an object-oriented database is we have unique IDs for every object, and that's for you work in a, especially in a 64-bit list, you can add 5,000 objects per second until the year 3000 and still have numbers. So, but this is a thing you really need for object-oriented databases. We've got index slots, but we've got referential integrity, meaning that if you have an object pointing to another persistent object, and say you kill this object, then, and you kill this object from the database, then silently and lazily, these values, the slot values are changed to nil. Yeah, so you don't have to worry about killing an object and then worry about all the objects that also point, that will just turn into nil objects. We've got maps. Basically, these are the B-trees, but they are transactionally safe. And basically just a persistent hash table, keys and values. We have sets. If you have an object with a list of values, say 1,000 values, and then you want to add one more element to the list, it becomes quite expensive to store an object again, because objects are stored in blocks. So what you do, what you created is the set object. And now, adding one more element to the set and linear time, or sorry, constant time operation. As I said before, we support the main list data types, strings, list, vectors, symbols, numbers, persistent objects, of course. Maps and sets are Allegro cache objects. And you can store unsigned byte data. So if you, as a list programmer, come up with a weird data type, you just marshal it to that and provide an unmarshaling function in your own business. And if you,
Do your lists preserve the keyness?
Nope. But Plop did it. Plop created this disk cons, which was a wonderful theoretical concept that really slowed down performance. And then I'll first give a demo before I talk any further. This is the. I'll give a demo to just demonstrate the main features of the Allegro cache, and then I'll talk a little bit about performance and some other issues. So, first thing I do is I load the Allegro cache, create a package, I open the file database, so now basically this is already a transaction. Yeah, by open file database, I open the database. This is the standalone mode. Then I create some objects. So first thing is a person with an ID, with an index any, first name, last name, and then all these other features. Dev class is just a simple macro for lazy programmers. Yeah? Basically it fills in all these things. If you look at the left, you see all the possible automatic creative field. You get relationship between people, sorry, you get two people, relationship started, ended, whatever. I create a city where people live in. This is a macro to get some better print for the objects they need. And then, just for fun, I create a very small family example. So for example, this is person number two, is Jan Aaston, which is my father, living in the city Emmen in the Netherlands. Born on this date, he's male, he's got a lot of children, this example only one, which is person number five, which is Jans Aaston, living in Braga, male, and with two kids, number seven and eight, which are by the way, Hans. And so this is a little graph of my family. So I can tell you that one. Then I create some relationships between these people, cities people live in. These are only lists. Now I do some code that I'm not going to explain because you often see it quickly, but I now finally populate the instances. So first of the family, make the instance of a person with the ID, the first of this list. You get it. The same thing for children. I fill in some relationships with the cities. I commit it to the database. So now things are in the database. And I can say, for example, person. I get all the people. Or do the same for the city, whatever. The first thing I demonstrate is doing a change class. So if you look at city, you see it didn't have a mayor. Of course, the city needs a mayor, so you add it to it. So now we've got a mayor, we create one open with the mayor Jerry Brown, we commit it to the database. And then we'll look whether the mayor is in the database. So this is the retrieve function. This thing works when you have an index on something. So this expression says retrieve for the object of type city, the slot name, where the slot name is open. So this thing returns Jerry Brown. This thing, of course, returns nil because the old city didn't have a mayor. Then there are three ways to get data from the database. You just can look through all the values. If you have an index, you can use the retrieve function. If you only want to retrieve the object identifier, in some cases, if you're writing a retrieval language, that's a lot better. Instead of getting all the objects, it's better to only get the OIDs and do, for example, an intersection of the number of retrieves, and then only get the objects in memory. So I can. This is the way to get the OID. I just specify when I do a retrieve, we're looking at the OID. And if I know an OID, I can get back to the person. So this is the low-level stuff. Now we've defined several higher-level languages on top as retrieval languages. One is done by Intelligent Handbook in Belgium, which created a SQL interface on top of the Lego cache. We used a prolog to talk to Allegro Cache. And who of you knows prolog? Oh, that's wonderful. I never get that response. So, for the three people who don't know prolog, okay, this thing says X is the father of Y. If in the database I can find a person X, but the sex is male, and it's got a list of children, C, where Y is a member of C. Yeah, did I evaluate this one? No. So I can type interactively father X, Y, and I get all the father relationships. I can say these one. What I also can do is this. This is if you want to embed prolog in the list function, you say prolog, and then you say father X, Y. So now you're in prolog mode. And now you go back to list mode, and you say list, print the list X and Y.
Yes?
Yeah?
First character is hidden.
The first character is hidden.
on the screen. Great.
You can look at the projector and look here.
I'll move my laptop. I'm totally at a loss. How do I?
Resize the window.
The scroll bar right.
Resize the window.
Grab the left side. Grab the left edge a little. Not that one. The debug window. Grab the left edge. There you go. No.
You had it. Look at the screen.
There you go.
That's good.
Thank you. Okay, I've done the father. Thank you all. Then I can do the mother. Now, once I got the father-mother relationship, I, of course, can go to the next level. I can do the parent relationship. So, X is the parent of Y, the father of Y, or the mother of Y. Yeah? So now I've done, gone one level up. Once I know the parents, it's very easy to define the grandparent relationship. So now I can do all the grandparents. And once I know what a grandparent is, I easily can reverse. I can say a grandchild is just the inverse of a grandparent. And then I get to the level where I can say to people who know Oracle that this would take at least one page Oracle code. And that's to do a recursive relationship in Oracle when you don't know how long the graph will be. So,
they actually have a tree search thing recently.
Recently they introduced something like that, yeah. But it's not simple.
No, it's not.
So here is X is the ancestor of Y if X is the parent of Y, or X is the ancestor of Y if X is the parent of some unknown person Z, and this unknown person Z is again the ancestor of Y. Isn't this beautiful?
Yes.
Now find all the ancestors. And a descendant of course the inverse. This is how you would do a join, find all the parents and child in a different country. I'm having a friend of mine right now translating all these examples to SQL. So in the next demo, I will first show you the SQL, and I'll show the follow-up query. Emails. I like this one, aunt. And now, having written it myself, I stare for a while. It's like a little logic puzzle, but this defines what an aunt is. It's just beautiful. I tried to do this hard, but this is really, really hard. And then again, I mean, I'm already on level 7 or something. Now I want to create what a nephew. Of course, a nephew is a male. Well, you have to be male, you have to have an arm or whatever. Or you have an uncle. And you're a niece. Anyway, so this is a whole set of relationships defined on top of something. What I now can do, by the way, this is just a little digression, but what you see, if you look at these results, you see all the type instances. What you, of course, can do is also work with the symbols. But I'm just going to skip that one. This is some fun, another problem what I'm now going to do, and that is,
Can I ask a question before you get into it?
Yeah.
I noticed you have def class star, and would that make every slot persistent?
No, if I can say, so we have three types of slot. We have allocation, instance. That means it's a transient object. Once you save it in the object, it won't be saved. You have allocation persistence, and you have allocation class.
Okay.
So default in dev class is a default with meta class that's persistent. But what you, if you do serious stuff, you instantly want to have transient objects. So then you just say, okay, allocation instance, and then it won't be saved to the database.
Okay.
Yeah? Look at this. I can turn a pro of every binary relationship and ternary relationship. So I can say there's a new relation called relation XY father if X is the father of Y. I can do the same thing for mother. So I can say relation X, Y, mother, if X is the mother of Y. So I've now created a whole new color thing. And then I can do a little fun thing where I say, okay, show all the relations between a person X and a person Y, where X and Y are not the same. And then back off is a product thing that says, okay, give me all the R in this class relation X, Y, R, put it in there. And then this will print the list of X, Y, and X. So what I do is I look through all the X and Y's and look at the relationship between them. So then what I get is, so the fun part, which is what you can do now, is you can take two rows in the database, two objects in your in the database, and okay, give me all the logical relations that I have these two objects, which in some cases is extremely handy to have. Okay, so this concludes the prologue demo. Any questions? Yeah.
So it's doing query optimization on the body, the bodies of the prologue statements. Is that?
Could you say this again?
Is it doing query optimization on the prologue, on the body of the prologue statement, like the aunt example, for instance? If the order wasn't particularly optimal, does that matter?
For prologue, it doesn't. It orders the clauses by taking first the indexed ones. That's one optimization that we do. There's another retrieval language. With which you can do the recursive ones, where we also look, okay, we first look at the lowest class, I mean the class with the lowest number of objects. Always avoid, anyway, there's several optimizations possible. And this is a list you can make any optimization you want. I'll skip that. Okay, then about the maps.
Then debugger. Does debugger like thing? Trace.
Prologue. Oh, we have a thing called a leash. Leash is the official prologue trace. So you can say leash this relationship, and then you get a trace of what's happening. Now, if you really get an error, you're in deep trouble. If we don't call a debugger, but using leash, you at least can, you can say leash all, and you see, you can just walk the whole thing right in the list per step. I want to continue. Okay, so we have maps as hash tables, and then it's time, so I'll just go through it quickly. You know how hash tables work, so say equid list foo with a number, a string, a list, a symbol, a vector, another object, and a map itself, and I can put them all in a map. So I can do this. So when I now have a hash table where the key and the value are the same, and just to check, I can look through the list and then find all the objects back. And of course, like map hash, it's a map function. And commit. We have this set thing, which I talked to you about earlier. So it just a level cache object. And I take the same list through and I add everything to the set. Is it in there? Yes, it's all in there. I can remove something from the set, and yes, it's gone.
This is going to pass by number two, otherwise it never gets there.
And this is a typical use where you take an instance, where a set would be the instance, sorry, the value of the slot. And then this is the way you would look. This is a typical use of some set. Sorry, I'm doing this quickly. Then frames, just a little example where you can use slots with variable number of slots, variable sizes. Yeah.
Do you have an extended loop pathway for those iterations?
No, we are going to build one. Steve Hopkins is already thinking about how to do that. So this is the simplest frame-based system in the world. We're working with the people from BioLingua to get a much more modern one integrated with Allegro Cache, but just as a demo, I created a frame-based system with only two slots. Every frame is a unique name and an A list of slots and values. So I start the frame system, which is a very posh way of starting a hash table, where you keep the frames hashed on the slot, on the name. And then I create an animal. I create some text. I say, okay, an animal is a living thing. A mammal is an animal with four legs and two eyes. A dog is a mammal. Fido is a dog. Oh yeah, spider also needs an owner, so I give it the owner Jans. Now I want to know how many legs Fido has. It's 4 plus. Fido is a dog, the dog is a mammal, and the mammal's got 4 legs. This is the default reasoning. And if Fido gets an accident, I can of course override it. 3 legs, 1 eye, dead. And still knows. Yeah. And the fun part is loading this thing, hardly, I mean, it's the same time as storing class objects. Because we store class objects as blobs, frames, doesn't make a difference. And you still can have slots, sorry, indexes for indices for particular slots in your frame system. Then the final thing of my demo, we've written a program. In XML, what we've written is a function called Objectify XML, which you do is you can take any arbitrary XML file, load it in Lisp, and it will be instantly a class object tree. And if you say, if you want to have the system, it also will be in the database. You instantly turn a XML file into an object file. So this is the file, this is in the medical publications. It's a catalog record with a unique ID, or date created, date revised, date authorized, date completed, title other, some others, publication type list, publication info, this whole source list, a complex XML file. And what I do is I just read it into Lisp. So now it's in Lisp. I can show all the classes that were built from this file. So here you see all the class definitions, class definitions for this particular file. I can prove that they're in the database because one of the things I did mention, the class definitions are first class objects in the database, so you can search for the objects in the database. So, for example, I can look through the class, Allegro Cache class, and then print, say, the class name of this element. So here you see that we already got quite a messy database with persons, relationships, cities, a set, frame-based system, and an XML system. And I can do a simple search, okay, give me for all the objects they created in the year. Okay, so that's the demo of the Lego cache. Any questions about that? Yeah?
Two questions. First, what sort of representation on disk do you use for this? Is it like a binary file and things like that with B-trees and stuff?
So the B-tree is completely in disk, but it's, just fixed size B-tree blocks, overflow blocks. And the objects are marshaled.
Okay. Sort of related.
Binary.
Sort of related to that. How's performance?
Okay, thank you for that question. So, okay, let me give me the time. So, we hope to release, we will release a Lego cache on August 15th. And currently we're working on caching strategy, which is one of the hardest things to do in the database. Index range queries, dumping the database into an ASCII file so you can store it and retrieve it if anything goes wrong. Internationalization is almost done, and we're working on journaling. One real wheel safety. There's a to-do list for the next version, but I'll skip that one. Okay, then we did some premature benchmarking. And we can do about a billion objects in 12 hours. And when we did small objects, 2 slots, which means we can add about 18,000 objects per second. if you then close the database, you index your tree for it's completely independent of the size. Lisp size doesn't grow beyond 260 megabyte, which is amazing. Of course, during the process, you create 2 terabyte of garbage, but it's not good. And the database on the disk is about 97 gigabytes. So if you want to have a rough feel for what it can do, then this is one bench, this is my benchmark that gives you a rough idea. What we also did is compare it to MySQL on a 64-bit machine, 1.5 gigahertz. When you get the size to 4 gigabyte, actually it's a 16 gigabyte machine. So this is the optical restore. What you see is that if you compare MySQL, where you do individual inserts, so not the block insert from MySQL, but individual inserts, and you compare it to writing, and if you write about 5 million objects in the database, you get about 6,000 objects per second, not 6,000 rows per second. And of course, this is MySQL, not in transactional mode. Well, we are in transactional mode. But if you do reading, then Allegro Cache, we close the database, start a new list, and then we read it in again. We get about 35,000 objects per second that we can read in. We don't know how to control the MySQL cache, apart from rebooting the entire machine, so this might use caching better. But in general, relational databases read in a lot faster than object-oriented databases. But then, this is a great finding. If we do random access in the database, we like reading in a row or just individual reads, we get also about 35,000 objects, and MySQL goes again to 6,000 objects per second for random reads from the database. Well, very large for this. Yeah? Okay, I'm almost done. And so what I think is with several times in France and in general in the Lisp community now, we have built tools that you can compare with a C-based equivalent. We just get the same C speed. Our B-trees are again the same speed as a Berkeley database, which is in general considered to be the faster B-trees. So I think that in general we can get writing, or we already have writing in the ways of MySQL or Oracle, that reading will always be faster in SQL databases or relational databases, and especially set operations. It's 10,000 years of research and all this kind of stuff. So that probably will be always faster. But we can do random access faster. And then we are working with a number of partners and friends and potential customers. We're all using Allegro Cache to prototype applications. So the Biolingua people are integrating the frame-based system in Allegro Cache. We've got a Belgian company that has put their Lisp-based data mining package on top of Allegro Cache. Telme has created a personal directory for mobile phones. We're working for another company to do Kido, our partner in India, to do fraud detection. All these are records. Let's see. I'm not going through all the applications. Oh, we have John Poderaro who's doing the entire development of this thing. He's got Tico at home. He's storing all the Tico program data and Tico programs in the database. And keep a personal agent at home. Okay, so that's my talk. Any questions?
Yeah, when you talk about webinar integrity, you mentioned all one integral pattern in the second one. Do you have the ability to restrict deletes or cascade deletes? We should have run a relational database.
Cascading deletes. Sorry, can you?
Okay, typical in a relational database with referential integrity is when you delete, you can set null, which is what you do, but typically in a relational database you can also restrict the delete, in other words say no you can't delete that because you will break referential integrity.
Okay.
You can also say cascade delete, when I delete all the children of and all the children of.
Basically what we do is we replace it silently with nil. So say an object points to an object, we store an object and you kill the object that you pointed to. Then the next time we get this object in that pointed to the object, we'll have now a nil value. Because it still had the old value in that, the old pointed to this thing, but now you know it's there, so you just replace it with nil.
Well, that's our other point. So I guess what you're saying is no, you don't swap both of them too much.
I don't, absolutely not. You have to do this as a user.
Yeah.
Okay, other questions?
Yeah, I've got
And have you done performance measurement of something that, like you would do with a join in a relational database, like for maybe do with a complex, you know, complex prolog you're talking here, have you done performance comparisons with something like that?
I think if you join it with the second one, if you've got an index for that one, then you get, we're slower than relational database with doing joins, absolutely. But if you're following it, main object or database is not following path, like a graph, taking two sets and doing the join, still slower than relational databases. You shouldn't use that for, then better use Oracle or whatever. Although, I mean, maybe in a year I'll have a different story, but right now what you see is we're slower from doing joins.
But it's not.
Especially.
But it's not fundamental to the design you could do.
We could do that, yeah. But we haven't optimized for that. We're just trying to get all the functionality out. And... Okay. That was it.